Warning. The following broadcast you're about to listen to is filled to the brim with explicit adult language and content. Don't like it? Don't listen to it. Don't complain about it. Just ignore it. If you like it or don't mind it, then listen up and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Tuesday, June 1st, 2021. This is episode 91, coming upon episode 100 here in the not-too-distant future. And, you know, I'm gonna have to dig back and stuff, but I feel like this podcast has a birthday coming up here fairly soon. Let's see here. Now I'm super curious, because I have forgotten. Episodes, all the way down. July 19th is when the first one was published, so not this month, next month. I knew it was coming up. I just, honestly, I do have it on a calendar. But I'm not logged into said calendar at the moment, apparently, so I just figured, well, fuck it, we'll find out right this second. So, anyway, but yeah, episode 91, and we're into June already. Holy fuck, has this year just flown the fuck by, because, well, this is just 2020 part two, and it sucks balls. So, but yeah, let's go ahead and get up on into it here. What's going on in my neck of the woods? Well, I'm trying to think and stuff. I've almost finished building the Piety and Pain box. I had set a goal to have it done not this past weekend, but the previous weekend, and still haven't gotten it. I've been really busy. But I am trying to, you know, I'm trying to get myself to focus and get this shit done. I got this backlog. The backlog is big. I want to keep growing my collection, but the backlog is massive and I don't want to keep growing the backlog. So we're going to say log a lot. But yeah, so I really need to just crack down, get into it, get her done. That was lame of me to say. I apologize. Yeah, move on from there. So, but yeah, beyond that, Jack has been painting his Stormcast a little bit, so he's actually awfully cute when he's doing it and stuff too. He's just my little nerd. And Charlie definitely wants to get into it too, but you know, he's just way too young and stuff. I got him some Seraphon earlier this year just because he just had to have it. And I was like, well, there's no harm in having a collection started and stuff, even if he can't do shit with it. I want to have all these armies and stuff in the house anyway, so fuck it. Beyond that, Krista and I, we did play some more Cursed City. I know last week I talked about how absolutely fucked we were playing it, and yeah, so we got back into it. We did succeed on our first game. After that, yikes on bikes. It's just not been good. We continue to get fucking raffle stomped. Now, the last game, admittedly, what was interesting in particular was that by the time we finished it, we had, between like event, like the Journey's End event and other shit, blah, 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 we actually did not decrease or increase fear, we did not decrease or increase influence, and nobody died. I think there were a couple little bits of treasure used, but that was it. That's all that happened. So realistically speaking, that last game we played was a wash. It once again was a fucking slog of frustration. I don't know, man. I don't know if these dice are fucking cursed or what. I don't remember rolling this badly all the goddamn time playing Blackstone Fortress. That's for fucking sure. It's been awful in terms of just getting the craziest awful dice rolls when it's to our advantage to do good, and then getting like awesome powerful dice rolls when it's our advantage to roll poorly. It's ridiculous. The amount of times too that we've rolled getting no dice for Destiny, that we get Destiny unfulfilled, or we roll fucking, you know, our time grows short, which basically means you move the Nightfall thing ahead. So we lose a lot of time in the game as far as in terms of, you know, game turn and where the Nightfall token is at the time. Well, in our case, we have a dial that we got from Schooner Labs on Etsy out of Canada. It is good shit, admittedly. I would recommend checking that shit out. If I remember, I will drop a link into the show notes, actually, for that shit. So, but yeah, we are planning tonight to get back into Ulfenkarn and see if we can make any fucking headway. Spoiler alert, I am predicting no. You know, I really want to play it, though. Don't get me wrong. I really want to play it. You know, getting your ass handed to you multiple times in a row. And now, I do understand that, you know, we've leveled our characters up, so we're naturally going to come across more powerful enemies. That's just the way the game's mechanics work. I do get that. I totally understand that. And, yeah, admittedly, some of these enemies have been like, oof, man, that's not fun. Well, or it is, it's challenging, you know? But it honestly feels a lot more that's going on than just, oh, there's some extra enemies on the board holding us up. There's some real shit ass rolls. And, I think it was the last game we played it was a Deliverance, if I recall correctly. If you're familiar with the Deliverance, you flip cards that build your map as you go, but you have to get certain cards that have a little warn symbol on them so that you can warn citizens there. And once you've gotten 8 of those, you can extract and be done with it. And my Alexa just made noises. I apologize if you heard it. Apparently it's time to rate a past Amazon purchase. Anywho, yeah, I lost my train of thought. Thanks, robot. The Deliverance thing. I'm sorry. the warn feature, you have to get 8 of them, like I said, then you can extract from the mission and be done with it. But the catch is you have to get 8 of them. Now, I don't remember right off the top of my head how many exploration cards there are. I want to say it's like 30. I counted them the other day. Let's see here if the internet can answer that for me so I don't have to go pull them out of the box in Cursed City. Clickety clackety. Here we go. Oh, no. No, I was thinking of discovery cards. There's 35 discovery cards. There's 19 exploration cards, okay? And out of those 19, 10 of them have warn symbols on them. So the point being is if you get to... if you miss out on 3 warns because of the suffocating gravetide, you might as well just not finish playing the mission. You might as well just count everybody as out of action and, you know, roll it off, see if anybody survives, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's kind of a cheap way of doing it, but it's entirely possible. Anywho, my point being is that we had gotten, like, a decent amount of warns, not right up front, but, you know, near the first portion of the game, and then we weren't getting shit, okay? And I think I figured out that 5 of the Warren cards, so 50% of the Warren cards, were in the last, like, 7 cards out of the whole fucking deck. So yeah, you know, it was just like, holy shit, this is why we're not doing well, is all, we have to keep plowing through a very lengthy game and stuff. Now, mind you, you know, it's, since it's up to chance, there's always a possibility you might get 8 worn cards right up front, you know, in which case, you know, your game could be a hell of a lot faster. But our last few Deliverance matches, games, journeys, that's the word, journeys, they have not gone well fucking at all. No amount of chance has done anything to help out in those regards. Huh. On a total random side note, I just came across a character dashboard for Curse City. Yeah, it looks okay. Not as good as the ones that we have, in my opinion, but that's just me. Anyway, I need to get off the internet. Okay, so, but yeah, as far as what else going on in our neck of the woods, I can't really think of anything else hobbying or gaming-wise that we've been doing. I'm probably forgetting something, but whatever, fuck it. So, let's move on to the newsy bits. Hold on to your fucking dicks. We have Age of Sigmar 3.0 coming out. They had their Warhammer preview this past weekend for unboxing Dominion. Dominion being like the AOS 3.0 equivalent of the Indomitus box. It's like the launch starter set. And it's going to have a mega fuck ton of new shit in it. A mega fuck ton of just models in general, but it's all new shit. Which is really fucking cool. Naturally, Stormcaster, one of the, you know, featured armies in the box. And I don't think that's surprising anybody at all. And I apologize if I keep taking these little breaks. I feel like I have, like, I was going to be like, oh, that's TMI and that's not polite to the internet. But fuck it. I feel like I have a burp stuck. So it keeps making me pause. So anywho. But yeah, so you got a shit ton of Stormcast. That's pretty cool. But there's a whole new race thrown in here, and there were a lot of rumors as far as what we were going to see. And the main one being Hobgoblins, and that's what we're getting. Except they're called Cruel Boys, Orcs. They're basically, like, from an aesthetic standpoint, they're kind of like just like a swampy, Uruk-hai, if you're familiar with Lord of the Rings. Just, you know, Uruk-hai if they came from the swamp. They are orcs, but they're not orcs, and they're goblins, but they're not goblins. I don't know how else to really describe them without you looking at them. But there's a lot of cool stuff going on aesthetically with these. Some people are a little undecided on them, from what I've heard and read, but, for the most part, I it seems like these have been accepted fairly positively, and I personally am very much looking forward to building these models and such. I think that the army sounds like it's going to be fun. I really like the whole, you know, swamp and just kind of strapped together aesthetic. It definitely screams Greenskins. There's just a lot of cool stuff going on here. There's like this swamp calla wizard, and his back is armored by wearing this like part of a skull of a gargant over his backside and stuff there. So there's a lot of like random rivets and you know, just like what looks like they just found scrap metal laying around and, you know, kind of just formed it to themselves and stuff. So there's a really cool aesthetic going on. It definitely, actually, I was just scrolling through the pictures again here. There's definitely a lot of more of an evil feel to them compared to most orcs, you know. Whereas, like, goblins have more of this crazy, zany kookiness going on. You know, like a dark craziness and stuff still, but you know, but overall goblins, I wouldn't say they're like, you know, purely funny giggles by any stretch, but they definitely have more of that aspect to them, both aesthetically and lore wise. And then you got like Iron Jaws and Bone Splitters and stuff. And yeah, they have those orky qualities of being super murderous and whatnot. But it seems more like it's just fighting for fighting's sake, you know, that they definitely just they want to kill shit and they want to kill it dead. But that's just because they like fighting. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call them evil as much as I would call them just fucking destructive and just warlike, you know. These cruel boys, as the name suggests, they're fucking evil. They definitely, you know, both aesthetically speaking, as far as like the overall character designs and stuff, there's definitely this sense of evil to them, you know, in comparison to their other green skin cousins. Yeah, there's in particular this Merc Knob with Belchabana. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4 heads hanging off between the banner and him. One is a skull. The other three are, you know, dead heads with flesh and everything. One of them has like fucking rope tied through the eye sockets and shit. And then on the top of the banner, he's got looks like a human hand just impaled on the top of it too. So yeah, it's a very, like I said, very evil and dark aspect to this whole army. So it looks like they're going to be more built for ranged combat as well compared to some of their green skin brethren. There's going to be plenty of them built for close combat too, but they definitely come across, just visually speaking, as faster and like more agile than their orcish brethren, but probably, I would assume, probably a little bit less durable overall and stuff. So somewhere in between the, you know, super teeny tiny Gloomspite Gits, goblins, grots, gretchens, whatever you want to call them, and Iron Jaws. That's where we're kind of sitting. And if you take that and make them fucking evil as shit, and there you go. The only models that they showed in this box set that I'm not like crazy about are the Hobgrot Slitas. These are smaller little dudes. They carry around daggers and like grenades, basically. They just kind of awkward shape and stuff to them. This, once again, could be something to do with, you know, poor paint jobs as far as their choices aesthetic. Like, they look well done, but it's been well known that sometimes GW has somebody paint something, and yeah, while technically impressive, it just has weird choices that don't sell the model. But I don't know. I'm not in hate with these things by any stretch, but I don't love them as much as the rest of the Cruel Boys. So, but yeah, this will have the badass limited edition rule book with it, as well as, obviously, you know, war scrolls. There's like a start here manual type thing, so you kind of, you know, little mini campaign sort of shit. And yeah, that's all included there with, I think it's 60 models in total. They did have a little video about 8 new things about Age of Sigmar. We're not going to get into all the details on that because we got a main show to get to here, the meat and potatoes. But the basic gist of it is it's designed to be more interactive, more reactive as well. That it seems like there's going to be more opportunity for players to keep playing even when it's not their turn. There's still ways for them to interact with opposing army. There's some upgrades to going second instead of first, more command points and shit. And then kind of like 9th edition 40K, it sounds like their goal really here is to make far more deadly violent games, you know, just everything getting fucking killed real fucking fast. So they did show off though some other models. They didn't just stick with what was in the Dominion box. They showed off a few new models coming out after Dominion for both Stormcast and Cruel Boys. I will say, the Cruel Boys kits they showed off, holy shit. They are really cool. So they have this Beast Skewer kill bow that is literally a gigantic ass crossbow. Like, it is massive. It's a war machine, and it is ridiculous looking, but in a cool way. The other one, the Break a Boss on Mire Brute Trogoth. Basically, take a Trogoth, make it fucking massive, and then have a dude standing on its shoulders with chains and stuff around its neck and so on and so forth. It is a really incredible looking model, in my opinion. On the flip side, the Stormcasts that are included in Dominion, I'm excited about. The models that they showed off, otherwise, I'm just not impressed by, I guess. There's a Knight Judicator with Griffhounds. It just looks like a Knight Judicator dude with, like a Judicator, but he's a knight. You know, that's it. You know, he's got a big-ass bow compared to most Judicators, but it's just, that's all it is. The Griffhounds look like Griffhounds. Okay. Then there's a Stormstrike Chariot. The Chariot, it looks okay. It's fairly basic. It's got two Griff Chargers out front, you know, dragging the damn thing along. And then there's two Stormcasts on the back of it, one shooting their bow, and the other one's like grabbing on and hanging off the side with an axe. It's just, honestly, it's just a piece that doesn't wow me. That's all it boils down to. I wouldn't call it a bad piece. It just doesn't have any sort of crazy ooh and ah to it. It lacks zazz. Either way, we got a lot of exciting shit coming out for Age of Sigmar. 3.0, I believe the Dominion box set is supposed to be out later this month from what they said on the live stream. I'm pretty sure that's what they'd said even, is that it would be out later in June, and not pre-orderable in June. You know, with the potential of being into July, basically. I could be mistaken, though. It might be that way around there. So, moving on. This past weekend, pre-orders started for Kragnos, both the book and the model, as well as Lord Croak. The Dixessa, the Town of Slaanesh, and Senessa, the Voice of Slaanesh, those are all going to be available. The Warsong Revenant is available for pre-order. Those two Witch Hunters, Galen and Duralia Vendenced, those will be available for pre-order. The Malusai Iron Scale, which was a limited edition model in terms of it was only available in the Shadow and Pain, I believe was the name of it. Shadow and Pain. Yes, I'm pretty certain. There it is. Shadow and Pain Battle Box. I can't see the box on the top of my desk here. The name of it's just out of sight by the lip of the desk. And I didn't feel like standing up because I'm lazy. But it's right here on the screen in front of me. That model will be available separately as well. They have some War Scroll Battalions in a box. There's some more of their shitty ass merchandise. I honestly, GW, give it up. Your shit looks like it was made by Redbubble. You're not even trying. It's ridiculous. So, and then lastly, chapter approved, the Grand Tournament 2021 with the Munitorum Field Manual Mark II. Both of those will be out as well. Just a heads up for those who might be interested. Lord Croak is expensive, but Kragnos is holy fuck beans expensive. He is clocking in at $160. I mean, mind you, looking at the model, that doesn't seem all that ridiculous when you think of how much a lot of just infantry-sized characters cost. But still, it's a lot of money. So, speaking of a lot of money, though, that is the other thing here that we're going to wrap up on the newsy bits here. Adeptus Sororitas are coming out as well. Pre-orders for that. Normally, I know we don't talk about the pre-order preview stuff, but this one is a little bit different. They will be starting pre-orders on the Codex. What's their name? Morven Vall. Morven Vall, the Abyss Sanctorum. The Paragon War Suits and the Celestian Sacrosants will all be available. Oh, and the Dogmata will all be available for pre-order alongside data cards and some pretty cool-looking dice. I like these a lot better than the previous Sororitas dice. I'm still not wowed, but I like them better. There's some Necromunda House of Faith of Fire. Let's back up. Let's not go through the whole damn article. Let's just focus on the fact that Sororitas, this new wave with the Codex, is coming out very, very soon. Right after we just had Soulblight Gravelords and Adeptus Mechanicus stuff come out. We've got Kragnos and all that shit coming out. We've got fucking Dominion sometime in the next month or so. There is a, like, GW, holy shit, guys. I get that, you know, things got kind of fucked up in the past year from the pandemic, but I think it's time to slow your roll on your release schedule. It's great to see all these new things. It is amazing to see all these new things. Do not get me wrong. But I can't help but feel like GW is missing out, financially speaking, by putting out too many things too quickly now. It has gotten a little carried away, because I'm sitting here looking at this whole thing like, I want to buy all this stuff, but there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to buy all this stuff unless some money falls into my lap that I'm unaware of. There's just too much at one time. Will I be able to eventually buy this stuff? Sure. But as far as like the immediate term, no. Toru, no. Yeah, it's, like I said, it's just a bit much. The wallet's, you know, a little frightened by what GW's pulling. I do feel like that they could get more hobbyists buying more stuff from them if they just slowed the releases up a little bit. People would be able to plan better, space things out better, etc. So, and then actually I did forget to mention, this Thursday, so, June 3rd, which for starters is my lovely wife's birthday, but secondly is the Warhammer Skulls Showcase. The Skulls Showcase, for those who are unfamiliar with the Skulls for the Skull Throne event, that happens on Steam every year, this is just the new name for that, but they're also using this opportunity to announce what sounds like several video game announcements. So, you know, I'll be curious to see that. That will be starting at 1 p.m. In the Eastern time zone of the United States. Check your local listings on your TV guide for your time frame. So, but yeah, it is exciting. I am definitely intrigued. That being said, they've just released two new Warhammer games not that long ago. Stormground, which is the first Age of Sigmar-based strategy game and stuff. I was going to say game, but that's not true. As far as PC games go, there is a VR game as well that's been out for a little bit. They just released two new games, though. Stormground and then Necromunda Hired Gun just came out today. Both of which have mixed reviews, namely, fun games that are marred by terrible, terrible bugs, which is a shame that they keep putting out subpar products. That being said, quite a few of the Warhammer-based games actually are a lot of fun and are very good, and once some bugs and kinks get worked out, they're even better. I do highly recommend, like Gladius, is very fun game that it's fairly bug free, at least in my experience. So but anyway, point being, GW, slow your roll, because then on top of that, I forgot about this, they've been showing off previews for the orc stuff too. So I can't help but personally, I'm thinking we're looking at We're looking at Soulblight Gravelords and AdMech, followed by Sisters of Battle, followed by Dominion, followed by this Orc launch. And I'm suspecting all of this and more can be yours if the price is right. But yeah, I suspect all this and more will be out before the end of July, even, would be my guess. But once again, that's just a guess. But yeah, I would say that, you know, take that with a grain of salt and stuff, because this is, I have no evidence to back that up necessarily, other than just knowing what GW's rate of release has been like lately. Once again, I get that they're probably trying to play catch up from all of the COVID-related crap, and like when the whole Suez Canal thing happened that blocked off global shipping really badly and so on and so forth. I highly suspect that they are ramping up. They're trying to catch up with the shit that hasn't gotten out yet, but also probably pushing up some stuff that was later on in the hopes of just kind of cramming everything together to just make sure they have some modicum of leeway to push things back later as need be. But at minimum, they're just trying to crunch time through getting out all the things that were supposed to have already been out. So, but yeah, it's rough. So, but anyway, we're not going to go over the preview for the Adeptus Sororitas or the Orc stuff right now. All I will say is that, holy fuck, particularly the Orc boys, I will say, toughness 5? Holy shit. So, just for your regular old boy. So, but yeah, that's, I'm trying to think if there's anything else, that's important. I think we're gonna go with a no. So, gonna take a quick break. When I come back, I'm gonna continue on with this Codex Drukhari review. And we'll see how far we get today. I honestly have a sneaky suspicion that we're going to have one last episode before we're finally fucking done with this book. And then for future book review stuff, I'm going to try and definitely come up with a new plan, because putting these small little bits is just not working. But I will say I've been extraordinarily busy lately, you know, holiday and blah, blah, blah. Anywho, gonna take a break. When I come back, we're gonna talk about that codex and go from there. So I will see y'all in a minute. Welcome back to the Regimental Vox. Before we get into the codex thing, a little clerical update that I meant to mention in the first portion of the episode. So yesterday was Memorial Day, so obviously didn't end up recording yesterday and stuff. This coming weekend, I'm going to be out of town, not getting back until Monday, I doubt I'll have time to record on Monday. So the earliest that I will have the next week's episode would be Tuesday. I am planning, as of right this second, to still do an episode next week, but you just like this week, it would probably not be until Tuesday. So if for some reason it is going to be later and or just not happen at all next week, I will provide an update then and there as it happens. So let's go ahead and get up on into this review here. Keep the ball a rolling. So in the last episode, we went over the witch cults. This episode, we're going to go ahead and get into the covens. And then I should, in theory, have some more time to get into a little bit beyond that. Once again, I apologize, actually, for this being broken down into so many parts. Part of it is just because I don't want to just read stuff and move on. I want to actually discuss my thoughts on specific abilities and things of that nature. So that's a lot more length of time involved versus just sitting down and reading through it. So, let's go ahead and get up on into this, see where we go from there. Homunculus Covens, we're going to start with the Prophets of Flesh, which I do believe Yuri and Rakarth, the unique character Homunculus in this book, that is his dealio specifically. And survey says, wrong page. That's what the survey says. Survey says, part two, Revenge of the Surveys. Yes, Prophets of Flesh. Prophets of Flesh. Obsession is Connoisseurs of Pain. At the start of your command phase, each character, grotesques, or monster unit with this obsession regains one lost wound. Alright, auto healing, always a bonus. Each time an attack is made against a unit with this obsession, unless that attack has a strength characteristic of 8 or more, an unmodified wound roll of 1 through 3 for that attack fails, irrespective of any abilities that the weapon or the model making the attack may have. So, you know, when you're looking at your toughness values here to begin with, let's see here, it said grotesques and monsters? Is that what it had said? The Homunculus, oh crap, I just lost the page by accident. Ah! Let me find it again. Where did you go? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you go? Cotton Eye Joe. I don't even know if that's the right words, but whatever. Yeah, here we go. Character, grotesques, or monster. So, you know, Homunculus, for starters, toughness 4. So an 8 would normally... Oh, wait. That was the wrong entry. Still toughness 4. My bad. An 8 would normally be a 2 plus. So once you get to 8, yes, it's 2 plus. But anything less than that is going to be minimum 4 plus. So realistically speaking, toughness or strength 5, 6, and 7 are going to be hampered. Anything... toughness 4 or I keep saying toughness, anything strength 4 or lower is not going to be any better or worse off. Same with strength 8 and higher. So as specifically against Homunculus as that stands, and then if you are looking at the grotesques, they are toughness 5, so in this case strength 8 once again, is advantaged, and then anything 7 or below is going to be hampered by that. But once again, then you get toughness 5, or oh my god, I'm going to keep saying it. Strength 5 or less is going to be completely unaffected by this ability altogether. And then lastly, let's see here, we got like the Talos, I believe is a monster, yes, at toughness 6, Kronos, also a monster, also toughness 6, being that they're toughness 6, we're looking at strength 7 being hampered, and only strength 7 being hampered by that. So, if anything, the tougher your model already is, the less useful this obsession is. I'm definitely not trying to say that this obsession is useless by any stretch, but keep in mind, it may not be quite as like, whoa, that's fucking crazy as you think it is, you know, until you actually break it down. Now, it does force an opponent who really wants to make sure something is dead, it does force them to use some heavier equipment to do so, particularly in the event of trying to kill a Homunculus. Yeah, overall, like I said, I wouldn't say this is a bad ability. It's actually very good, but it is going to be something where you want to keep in mind before you automatically build your build around it, that it may not be quite as useful as you thought it would be versus just the way the game is played. So the way the rules are standard in respects to strength and toughness, cross-sectioning, blah, blah, blah. Warlord trait, Diabolical Soothsayer. When it's set up on the battlefield, when this model is set up on the battlefield, choose one of the below. Until the end of the battle, add 1 to this warlord's toughness and wounds characteristics. Or until the end of the battle, add 1 to this warlord's movement and attacks characteristics. So once again, as we were just going over toughness 4, if you've got that Connoisseurs of Pain obsession, You know, alongside that, which I shouldn't say if, you would have that in that case. But, yeah, being that you go from toughness 4 to toughness 5, at that point, well, once again, the tougher you are, the less useful the obsession itself is. The regaining of the lost wound is useful regardless. But yeah, toughness 5 and then having 7 wounds. Your homunculus would be rather durable, overall. So definitely nothing to like scoff at by any stretch. And a homunculus would also be, there's the alternative option, movement 8, which just brings him in line with the Archon and Succubus. He's movement 7 to begin with. So, and then attacks characteristic, bring him up to 5 attacks, which once again puts him on par with the Archon. Overall, if I would say between the two choices, the toughness and wounds characteristic is probably going to be the more valuable thing. Usually, not always, but usually I found that it is better to double down on what's already good about your army than it is to try and force everybody to become jack of all trades. You know, making the homunculus, who's already a little bit slower than the other warlord potentials, and does the least amount of attacks out of the other warlord potentials, bringing it so he's just in line with everybody else, is good, but it's not as good as taking what he's already advantaged by and amping that up. That's not always the case. Sometimes you do want to fill a gap, particularly like in an army like, Tau, which are very, 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 very skewed towards ranged combat and fold like wet paper bags in close combat. You may want to put in a few characters with special upgrades or very specific unit choices designed exactly to overcome that weakness. So that way, if you're really in a bind, in a pinch, you can go ahead and be able to use that backup ability. But like I said, I would say that that's generally an exception and not a rule, in my opinion. So, Relic, the Vexator Mask, Prophets of Flesh Homunculus model only. Really, you don't fucking say. Enemy units cannot fire Overwatch at the bearer. Okay, well, that's a plus. At the start of the fight phase, you can select one enemy unit within 3 inches of the bearer. That unit is not eligible to fight this phase until after all eligible units from your army have done so. So, in theory, the way that this would probably benefit the most, is to charge in your, homunculus first. That way they can reach out and touch somebody. Inappropriately, I might add. But yeah, once they're in contact, the enemy's not going to be able to fire Overwatch on him to stop him from getting into contact. But on the assumption that he makes it, of course, once he's in contact, they can't fire Overwatch on anything. You're not going to use this to use your homunculus like a wrecking ball and just slam him into the enemy by himself. That's not going to get you very far, most likely. He's not exactly terrible in close combat, but I don't feel like he's, you know, gonna fucking blow your fucking socks off. He does have a poisoned weapon, that's a 2+, but it's no AP, it's 1 damage. So at most, you using that, you're looking at 4 wounds, on 2+, but 4 wounds all the same. There is the Scissor Hand, which still only 1 damage. It's only weapon poison weapon 4 up, but he gets 2 additional attacks, and it's at -2 for AP. So a potential 6 attacks with those upgrades is not bad. I'd have to do the math, though, to see if the 4 attacks on the 2+ is with no AP is better than this one or not. And then the Ichor Injector, Only one attack per turn can be made with this weapon. Each time the attack is made, if a hit is scored, the target suffers one mortal wound and the attack sequence ends. So, point being is that even when you look him over, he's still not going to be like a succubus or even an archon where he's going to get stuck in and be able to hold his fucking own and really just blend through shit. That's not what he's built for. But using this, if you're using this relic with the Prophets of the Flesh build, having somebody come in behind him that you don't want getting overwatched is a good idea. So, stratagem, Sins Writ Large. It's 1 CP or 2. Use this stratagem at the start of the fight phase. Select one Prophets of Flesh infantry unit from your army that is within 6 inches of a friendly Prophets of Flesh homunculus unit. Until the end of that phase, each time an attack is made by this infantry unit, you can reroll the hit roll. If the selected unit is a Grotesques unit, this stratagem costs 2 CP. Otherwise, it costs 1 CP. So, yeah, you're going to want to, once again, this coven is built for close combat overall, which I did forget to mention my thoughts there. Being able to force an enemy to fight last is very useful. Kind of comes down to the same concept of like the board control and being able to fuck with your opponent's plans. If your opponent knows that there's a potential to end up going last against something that he does not want to go up last against, you can use the homunculus basically to push the enemy to that either he's got to focus down on this thing and he can't fight against other targets, or that he's going to have to choose to ignore it and dance around it to stay out of combat with it, if at all possible. So, moving on, the Dark Creed. You're where long, dry hope on. Different creed. Obsession, distillers of fear. So, apparently we drink fear. Let's see, they have the following abilities. Aura of Terror. Different from the Tower of Terror. While an enemy unit is within 6 inches of a unit with this obsession, subtract 1 from the leadership characteristic of models in that unit, and subtract 1 from the combat attrition tests made for that unit. Alright, so, we've been through this many times before. Leadership, generally speaking, is not going to make or break the combat. Combat attrition tests, same deal. Typically not going to make or break the combat. That being said, the combination of the two, that could be a little bit more useful overall. That you're looking at two separate abilities, essentially, that take advantage of each other. I would say this is a whole greater than the sum of the parts. Honestly, I haven't really, done the math or anything on it, so I don't know how useful this would really be, but it sounds more useful than either ability separately, and even more useful than just straight up adding their two values together. And then we also get each time you make a melee attack for a unit with this obsession that targets a unit with a leadership characteristic that is equal to or lower than the attacking unit's leadership characteristic, add 1 to that attack's hit roll. So that is something that might be taken advantage of. Let's just go ahead and take a look here at the leadership value of some of these units that this would apply to. Let's see here. Rax, if you have an Akathist, the leadership value is 8. So admittedly, a lot of things are typically in the leadership 7-8 range in the game, at least from what I've seen. If you do get within a close enough range to force the enemy's leadership down, as long as it becomes equal or less to you, you are going to go ahead and be able to add 1 to your attack rolls. That is quite useful, combined once again with the Aura of Terror. So I would say these two abilities in this obsession really do feed off of each other. And once again, it takes something that I regularly consider a rather underwhelming concern, and turns it into an actual threat. So, Warlord trait, Fear Incarnate. At the end of your movement phase, you can select 1 enemy unit within 9 inches of this Warlord and roll 3d6. If the result is greater than that enemy unit's leadership characteristic, until the start of your next movement phase, that enemy unit cannot perform actions. If that unit's currently performing an action, it immediately fails, and it loses the objective secured ability. Once again, this is about messing with your opponent's head. You know, if he knows that he is going to have a difficult time with completing the mission, he's going to probably want to magnet focus fire down on the warlord that has this trait. Or if you bought the trait for another character or something, whoever ends up with this trait, overall, I would say that it's useful. It's not a directly offensive ability. You're not, you know, killing models and stuff with it. But just the ability to make somebody think twice about wasting their turns and time getting a model or unit doing its actions just to have it fucking undone, and that's just a waste of time then for them. It will force some wily opponents to actually take a step back. So, Relic Spirit Sting. Dark Creed Homunculus models equipped with Stinger Pistol only. This replaces that and has the following profile. Range 12, pistol 3, strength 2, AP neg 3, and 1 damage. It's a 2 plus poison weapon, and each time an attack is made with this weapon, invulnerable saving throws cannot be taken against that attack. So, let's see here. It's replacing the Stinger Pistol. The Stinger Pistol is normally 12-inch range, pistol 1, strength 2, AP 0, damage 1, and still a 2-plus weapon. Here you're getting, pistol 1. This is pistol 3, so you're getting 3 shots. Still the same strength, but you're getting AP neg 3 on top of that. So even Space Marines become, what, a 6-up in order to survive? And then even if they got some fancy invulnerable save to skip that, boom, fuck you and your invulnerable save. So, I would still say overall, it's actually a pretty good weapon. But whether or not that's worth using your relic up on to have a pistol weapon, is up to you. But I would say if you do decide to do that, it's probably not a bad idea. And then we have an esoteric kill delivered from afar. It costs 2 CP / 3. Use it when you select a Dark Creed core or Dark Creed character to shoot with until the end of the phase. Each time you select a target for an attack made by this unit, you can ignore the Lookout Sir rule. If the selected unit is a Talos unit, the stratagem costs 3 CP. Otherwise, it costs 2 CP. You're just looking at turning these dudes into assassins. So, not a bad idea overall. Kind of expensive, but just to ignore an enemy's lookout role. But still, overall, I feel like this coven is a better choice than it might appear at first. So, once again, I was afraid going from the top that you're looking at something that affects leadership and really nothing more than that. So, not bad. Homunculus Covens, the Coven of 12. Butchers of Flesh is their obsession. Each time a model with this obsession makes an attack with a melee weapon, improve the AP characteristic of that attack by 1. It does exclude relics, though, too. Homunculus, now you're looking at tools giving you AP neg 1 on a 2+. The scissor hand, you're looking at it being neg 3, which once again is going to help you carve through Space Marines even better, or Space Marine equivalents. If a unit with a obsession is performing an action, it can still make attacks with ranged weapons without that action failing. So no longer are you sitting on your dicks waiting for the action to complete. You can defend yourself and still go on the offensive just without moving. Warlord traits. Scarlet Epicurean. Each time an attack is allocated to this warlord, subtract 1 for the damage characteristic of that attack to a minimum of 1. This is an ability that I have a love-hate relationship with. You see this ability in some format, pretty much in every book. It's once again a great in theory, but not as useful in practice. It's not bad in practice, it's just not as useful. Namely, because of the fact that, yeah, someone can hit you with a las cannon, and too bad, you're going to keep on surviving it. But if a bunch of guardsmen bring up their fucking flashlights and shoot you at the same time, well, you're just fucked. So, it does create an interesting rock, paper, scissors dynamic, but overall, it's okay. Relic, the Flensing Blade. It's for the Coven of 12 Homunculus only. Really. Replaces the tools. Which, once again, we're looking at this strength user. AP 0, damage 1 with a poison weapon 2+. This is still strength user. So you're looking at strength 3. But AP neg 2 and D3 damage. Each time you attack a character unit with it, though, it has a damage characteristic of 3. So once again, these guys are built for assassinating characters. And then lastly, their stratagem, a most inventive demise for 1 CP. Use it after your homunculus unit consolidates. Select one enemy character model, excluding vehicle or monsters, that is within engagement range of this homunculus, and roll a D6. On a 2 through 5, that model suffers D3 mortal wounds. On a 6, that model suffers D3 plus 3 mortal wounds. So, once again, looking at assassinating characters, and the ability to just roll a D6, and if that's good enough, the 2 through 5, then they automatically are going to get D3 mortal wounds. If you roll a 6, then it's going to be the D3 plus 3, so up to 6 wounds. Once again, this is very much clearly built to be an anti-character option, which does make it very specific, admittedly, but it does seem like it does good, in theory, at the job that is intended for it. So, lastly, let's look at the time. Yep, so lastly, we'll go over the other covens, the Build-A-Bear versions. Same deal, you get to pick 2 unless it's all-consuming, then you only get 1. Artist of the Flesh is all-consuming. Each time an attack is allocated to a model with his obsession, subtract 1 from that damage characteristic of that attack. Oh, and it excludes vehicle models to a minimum of 1. Same problem I was just explaining not that long ago. The enemy is going to open up with the cheapest shit they got, and just knock your shit down really fast. You know, a bunch of strength 3, 1 damage las guns are going to do a lot more to you than a handful of las cannon shots even. So, Dark Harvest. Each time a unit with a succession finishes a charge move, you can select one enemy unit, excluding vehicle units, within engagement range of roll a d6. On a 4+, that enemy unit suffers 1 mortal wound. Being able to just do free damage on the charge is not bad. Dark Technomancer is all-consuming. Each time a unit with a succession is selected to shoot, you can choose to enhance any or all of the ranged weapon models in that unit are equipped with. All of the ranged weapons models in that unit are equipped with. My apologies. I was like, that sentence doesn't make sense because I was misreading it. If you do so until the end of the phase, each time an attack made is with an enhanced weapon, add 1 to that attack's wound roll and add 1 to the damage characteristic of that attack. But that attack's hit rolls cannot be rerolled. If any unmodified hit rolls of 1 are made for attacks with an enhanced weapon, the bearer's unit suffers 1 mortal wound after shooting with this weapon. If the bearer is a vehicle or monster model, it suffers D3 mortal wounds instead. It's a very wordy one for starters, but as it stands, on the one hand, I will say that, you know, boosting your wound roll and damage characteristic of the attack is definitely very impressive. It's definitely something very useful overall for those who are, you know, familiar with plasma weapons. It basically allows you to overcharge, you know, just the way a plasma weapon works. That being said, the idea of hurting your models is always something that you have to kind of weigh out and balance. So, yeah, on the one hand, you could, use that ability on somebody who has wounds to spare, who has the ability to maybe heal themselves. It's dangerous to do on a whole unit just because you increase your odds of getting an unmodified one. But using it on individual characters and stuff, not such a terrible choice. I think overall, it depends on your situation, but I would say risks, fortune favors the bold, basically. So take a few risks and see what happens. I like Cataphron Destroyers in the ADMAC with the Plasma, Plasma Culverin, I think is theirs, or it's the Caliver. I don't remember. I'm getting that mixed up with the one for the Skitarii Rangers and Vanguard. But point being is that, when you supercharge that shit, overcharge that shit, you go from being mean to being stupid levels of just destructive. But you could lose very expensive models very quickly in the process. So, because the likelihood of getting ones when you're shooting so many shots is very high. Experimental creations. Add one to the strength characteristic of models with this obsession. Pass. I've mentioned this many times before. Boosting your strength is nothing that's super valuable. For racks, it's not bad. Going from strength 3 to strength 4. Especially since they are already equipped with the rack blades to begin with, but since you've got poison weapons across the board for the most part, you're hitting on fours anyways, and how many times are you up against toughness 3 or lower shit in this game nowadays? It's not that prevalent. Most of your main opponents are going to be toughness 4 or higher anyways. That's not to say all of them. You know, there's still plenty of people playing Astra Militarum. Adeptus Sororitas has a lot of toughness 3 shit, etc. But I would just say overall, it's going to be specific depending on your opponent, whether you want to use this or not. Hungry for flesh. Oh, and before I move on, and specific to what unit you're working with. If your build is built mostly? Mainly around racks and stuff, then yeah, it might be useful depending on your opponent. If you're primarily running grotesques and whatnot as your main hard hitters, probably not so much. All right. Hungry for flesh. You can reroll charge rolls made for units with this obsession. You already got models that are moving pretty quickly and being able to, get up in the enemy's guts quicker. Re-rolling bad charge rolls, I would say that's always a good boon. So, Masters of Mutagens. Each time a model with a obsession makes a melee attack with a poison weapon, excluding relics, that targets a unit that is not a vehicle or titanic, an unmodified hit roll of 6 automatically wounds the target. This is actually, I would say, this is the kind of the reverse from like the Dark Technomancers, where it's kind of risky. The likelihood of rolling a 1 is just the same as rolling a 6. Being able to just automatically wound the target when you flood them with attacks is definitely useful. So, and that's, once again, this is not to say that Dark Technomancers is a bad choice, but since it's all-consuming, you don't necessarily have something to balance the equation out, so. Master Torturers. Each time a unit with this obsession is selected for the Torturer's Craft Stratagem, page 68, we'll have to double-check that, reduce the command point cost of that stratagem by 1. That is a very specific ability. That's page 69. The Torturer's Craft. It's 1 CP/2 CP. So it's either free or 1 CP then. I was wondering if it maybe limited it, but use it in the fight phase when Urian Rakarth or a Homunculus Coven unit from your army is selected to fight. Until the end of the phase, each time a model on that unit makes an attack, you can re-roll the wound roll. If this stratagem is used when a character or a Rax unit that contains 10 or less models select to fight, it costs 1 CP, otherwise it costs 2. Until the end of the event phase, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, you can reroll the wound roll. Yeah, being able to reroll wound rolls is awesome. And being able to make that ability just an auto ability is extra, extra nice. So, although, I mean, you are limited to only being able to use a stratagem once per turn, once per phase. Oh, God. Man, my brain is like at the moment. So it's not going to be something where you're just going to have your whole army running roughshod across the enemy with that ability. But when you need to use it, it's going to be free, generally speaking, depending on what unit you use it on. So I would say this is useful. Obsessive Collectors. Each time an enemy unit is destroyed by a melee attack made by a unit with this obsession, a model in that attacking unit can regain D3 lost wounds. Each model can only be healed once per turn. If the attacking unit is a Rack unit, D3 destroyed models can be added back to the unit. These models can only be set up within engagement range of enemy units that are already within engagement range of this unit and no longer count as having been destroyed for the purposes of morale tests this turn. Well, you do have to wipe out a whole enemy unit. Mind you, you could just finish off an enemy unit that's already pretty beat to shit. Being able to regain lost wounds is useful. Being able to bring models back, basically making your army's points value even higher for free, is typically a really good bonus to have. But you do have to finish off a unit. It's not just kill a model and you get this. You do have to completely kill the enemy in order to get the value out of it. Enhanced Sensory Organs. Each time a model with this obsession makes an attack, the target does not receive the benefits of light cover or heavy cover against that attack. Being able to ignore cover, depending on which enemy you're up against, may or may not be useful. I will say, I know I talked about this... was that in the Cabal one or the Witch Cults one? I don't remember. But I did kind of poo-poo on a little bit on being concerned about, you know, ignoring cover. But the more I've thought on it, particularly the fact that this army does not have a whole shit ton of stuff that'll just chew straight through armor. A lot of low strength attacks. They've got plenty of negative AP too, but it's usually on very specific weapons, very specific models. Most of their attacks are very low AP, low damage. So being able to make sure the enemy doesn't get to make it your life any more miserable is a good thing. Lastly, we have Splinter Blades. Each time a model with a obsession makes an attack with a melee weapon, an unmodified hit roll of 6 scores 1 additional hit. Exploding sixes are always cool. Being able to, with a really good roll, do more hits than you did attacks in the first place is pretty fucking cool. So, once again, outside of Artists of the Flesh and Dark Technomancers, those two are all consuming. And the rest of them you can kind of mix and match. I would say that overall... some of these do go well together. I would say that, you know, Splinter Blades combined with either Experimental Creations or Hungry for Flesh, both of those would be useful. Also, Obsessive Collectors. All of these melee abilities kind of feed off of each other. You'd have to find the combo of what works best for you. Between the two... all consuming ones. One's super defensive, one's super offensive. And you generally speaking in this game, it's kind of 50-50 for me right now. As far as a good offense is a good offense, or a good defense is a good defense, or the mix and match, a good offense is a good defense, blah blah blah. Being able to hold out against the enemy is useful. But Death Guard, you know, have been known to be able to just take a bunch of punishment, but can't really dish it out and move too slow. But this is an army that can actually kind of dish out damage pretty well and move stupidly fast. But overall, I would say something that can just put down the enemy quicker is going to be more useful. This once again goes back to playing off your strengths as opposed to trying to, you know, shore up your weaknesses. Rather than making an army that's super glass cannon-like, you know, being able to be tougher and more durable, it's generally going to be, you know, better to just make them far more deadly, so that you can just tear through the enemy before they even get an opportunity to hurt you. So, but yeah, I think we're going to call that a call here today. I will once again continue this review here in the near future. That'll probably be next week's episode. And yeah, like I said, then after that, I'm not sure if I'm going to do Gravelords or AdMech, or Adeptus Sororitas is coming up really soon too. So I'm not sure which one we will jump into after that. But whichever one we do, I am going to try and come up with a different format in advance, so that we can hopefully cut down on the amount of parts. It still might not necessarily be all in one episode, but maybe two as opposed to, you know, 700. So, but we're going to call that a call. Thank you guys for listening. As always, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. You can follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. You can check out the painting studio, Danger Close Painting Studio on Facebook, and follow that as well. So, and also on Instagram. So, but thank you guys for listening. I will catch you all on the next episode. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.